Blog Talk
Ladies
Radio.
And gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome to the Council of Elders. You are live with Jensen Brooks and his special guest, Mr. Michael Kier. Please stand by to go live. 3, 2, 1.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Jensen Brooks, and I'd like to welcome everybody today to this edition of the Council of Elders program. For our new listeners, let me just briefly tell you about the purpose of the Council of Elders. The purpose is for older people, elders, to give advice, counsel, and life experience to younger people. Advice that can help them navigate successfully through life, deal with issues, and avoid some of the pitfalls that can affect everyone. The concept is based historically on African culture, where elders in the community had council members to help guide tribe members, settle disputes. My dream is to have a council of elders group or organization in every community in America, and for the council of elders to be known about in the community, so that people could have an opportunity to get advice from elders about their concerns. But it first starts with a single Council of Elders group. So I'm assembling a group of elders here in the Sacramento, California area. I'd like to have about 10 volunteers. Once we get enough volunteers, we can go out to youth centers, juvenile halls, boys and girls clubs, churches, etc. We can also be available to young adults as well. Sometimes they need advice on how to raise kids, how to get along in their careers, marriages, etc. Moving forward, this is an effort to bridge the gap between young people and elders. The younger generation and the older generation should start to merge. The Council of Elders is an effort to do so. So with that, I will introduce... Our guest for today, Michael Gant, and he is here to share with us a little about his life as someone who lives with mental illness. First, he's a proud U.S. Army veteran and retired Sacramento County, California employee. He is now a member of NAMI, the National Alliance for Mental Illness, Sacramento, where he works in the roles of FaithNet Coordinator, NAMI Connection Recovery Support Group Facilitator, Peer-to-Peer Trainer and Homefront Trainer for Families of Veterans. He is also a contributing consultant for Mental Health California Project, Brother Be Well, a project dedicated to the well-being of boys and men aged 13 through 30. He's also a person of lived experience with a dual diagnosis of substance abuse and mental diagnosis, and he has dedicated himself to reaching out to and helping others achieve mental wellness. Michael, thank you for being on the show today.
Well, thank you for having me, Mr. Brooks. I'm grateful to be here.
Right. And tell us a little bit about where you were born and a little bit about your earlier life and how you came into the man you are today.
Well, I was born in Oakland, California. I was raised primarily in Richmond, and I was, my upbringing from the time I was a baby, was up until around 12, was a very, very enriching, existence. It was definitely what I considered at the time in the 60s, a near middle class and existence. I went to multicultural schools. I got good grades. I had loving loving parents. You know, they were my adoptive parents, but they were my parents, you know, just the same. And you know how it is, you know, in the Black community, really, if you're a parent figure, that's all they are. We don't talk about steps or adoptives or what have you. So that's what I knew. My mother gave me a great life. She was nurturing. She helped me with, you know, throughout my education. So did my father, to a certain degree. My father and I, we had a great a relationship in the beginning. I likened it to, you know, Opie and Andy Griffith. You know, because you know he used to take me fishing and baseball games. We talk. You know, he started giving me life lessons, and he's the one who introduced me to the church, and, you know, and which led to my spiritual being that I live today. Mm-hmm. But my mother passed away early, and all of a sudden, my father took a 180 degree turn, and he, you know, he mistreated me. You know, there was a lot of physical and verbal, well, not physical, I'm sorry, of verbal and emotional abuse. And, you know, prior to that, you know, I had suffered some, you know, sexual abuse, and I didn't have anybody to talk to about it. Even as good as relationships I had with my mother and father, I couldn't talk to them about it. And I, you know, at the time I would never be able to understand why, but I do now. But, you know, because already, you know, you were starting to learn about certain things that you just wasn't talked about. Mental health was one of them, you know, so. But, you know, my journey really started then went on to high school. Grades dropped. You know, I started missing school, started hustling on the side because, you know, my father wasn't providing no more than a roof. For me, everything else I had to do for myself from the time I was 15 on, which is okay. I developed a work ethic, thank God.
Mm-hmm.
From there, I started, isolating a lot. I was depressed, but I didn't really know it. I mean, back then it wasn't like, you know, well, all anybody knew is that they didn't see me. I wasn't social. You know, I stayed to myself. You know, I watched a lot of TV. I did a lot of sleeping. And lived in my own anguish. You know, I just continued that on until finally I decided, well, you know, I'm going to go out and, you know, and try to have fun like my friends are. But for me, the only way to do it, because I was so introverted, was to start drinking. And, you know, that helped me, unleash a personality that I didn't even realize was in me. I was fun. I was, you know, everything was great while I was drinking, you know, but mm-hmm. Thank God, you know, it stayed sociable, wasn't doing it every day. You know, that's the way it was. Even when I went into the military, I mean, I drank. But it stayed social for a lot of years. It wasn't until, you know, I was in my 30s before my drinking got out of hand. You know, I mean, I lived what I considered a normal military life. You know, we worked hard. We played hard, you know. It was at some point that someone outside of the military introduced me to cocaine, and that took me to newer heights. And, you know, so for a long time, I did that. That was my drug of choice, aside from alcohol. But I went on to what I thought was a successful career until I ended up being let go because the Army downsized. From that point on, you know, I bounced around from job to job for a while until I finally found myself working with the county. But, you know, I was my home life was fine to a point, you know, but I still started drinking every day. And I started isolating more, even within the family dynamic. My partner at the time, you know, she's a lovely woman. I don't know how she managed to put up with me, but one of the things about me, though, is I didn't cause, certain damage to the family. I didn't lose any property. I didn't lose any cars. I didn't lose jobs. You know, I never got fired behind my vices. I was blessed with that. You know, and that really let me know that, you know, God was with me throughout my whole life, you know. And people often said, I've heard people say that, you know, well, you know, if you believe in God, if God is with you, why are things happening? You know, and I think that, you know, things happen because God allows you to make choices, good or bad, you know. And, you know, so, you know, one of the things that I did lose, though, because of it was a life with my kids. I got four kids. They're all grown, and they're doing wonderful. They're awesome kids. You know, they got their families. They got their jobs. I was with them long enough in their lives where I instill certain values that they enjoy today.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk to them. We have a great relationship. You know, my only daughter and my oldest son, they're always telling me, you know, that I was and still am the person that they're most proud of, that, you know, when it comes to their upbringing. And they're proud of me now because of the things that I have done with my, you know, with my life since changing. You know, I drank myself, what I like to think, not to death, but to the point where I started worrying about my physical being. I go to the doctor a lot, you know, on a regular basis. And there was a time when the doctor told me that if I didn't stop drinking, I would have a liver problem, you know, and that started bothering me, you know. And so it was also about the same time that I was, like, really tired of my lifestyle. I knew that I was responsible for what was happening, what didn't happen, should have, like, you know, I should have had, always thought that I should have had a better career than I had, but, you know, I'm not, you know, I don't feel sorry or bad about the, you know, about the jobs that I had, because while I had them, I did a lot of good for the community. And I'm proud.
Let me ask a quick question about what age were you when you started to realize that, a doctor talked to you, of course, but what age were you then?
I was in my 40s by then. I think I was around 45, really. You know, so I was really getting ready to come to a crossroads where, you know, where I had to make the decision that, you know, to better my life. I hadn't gotten there yet. My journey toward sobriety first started in 2010, and I went through, you know, I went through some outpatient programs that didn't work for me, and I kept asking for rehab, and I, you know, the organization that I was with at the time wouldn't suggest or refer me to rehab. I finally went to the VA, who after talking to me and asking me a series of questions, decided that I was a good candidate for rehab. And that was 3 years after making that first decision to try to quit. This was in 2013, and this is the time when I, after having tried two separate times, to stop with my vices, this time took. I went to rehab, and I haven't looked back since.
Right, right. Tell us a little bit, what was that rehab process? What was it like? Did you get psychiatric help or
Well, first of all, you know, I really didn't know what to expect from rehab. I just knew that they had to have some programs put together that was, you know, that was going to teach me some things that, and show me some things that, you know, that would wake me up, and they did. I mean, yes, I did have some mental health evaluations almost at the beginning, and from that point, after about 3 weeks, I got my first diagnosis of PTSD, bipolar disorder, and depression. I also suffered from extreme anxiety, which also leads to depression. So, you know, actually, that was really an eye opener. I was actually relieved to hear that I had mental health issues, because, I mean, I knew something was wrong, you know, throughout my life, but I didn't know what. I mean, I had anger issues, a lot of insecurities, you know. But when I got that diagnosis and we started in on classes for for various things to learn about the mental stresses and traumas that we must have gone through, things that we're putting our bodies through. I learned a lot during that time, and while I was there, I was so in awe of the instructors and how they presented the information to us that I knew that I wanted to do what they did. So I'm not quite doing what they're doing, but I am working in that community, and a couple of those instructors are now my contemporary friends.
Right. Michael, let me just stop for a brief moment and let everybody know that you're listening to the Council of Elders program on Saturday mornings. And we have as our special guest today, Michael Gant. So, Michael, what advice would you give someone who was walking in your shoes, before you went, for your treatment? Oh, but let me say this first, though. You mentioned that you had tried to get some rehab a couple times before, and they didn't quite meet the bill. But just let me say that sometimes we have to be our own advocates. We know we need tests. We know we need certain procedures, and it seems like some of the hospitals want to be more like gatekeepers. They don't want to give you the test. They don't want to do what you thinking that you need. So it's a good thing that you sort of sidestepped that and found your own help. But so I commend you for that, because a lot of people would have just given up and went with what their hospital or whatever said. But what advice would you give someone now who may be experiencing some of the issues that you were experiencing?
The way I want to put that, Jansen, is like this. I work in an environment where we don't give advice. We're peers. We don't give advice. What we do is we share our stories. However, if I come across someone who's reaching out to me, maybe because of this broadcast, or they've seen me out in the community, when they come to me, they're generally going to have specific questions that they want answered. If someone were to ask me, What did I do? Then I'll tell them just like now. You know, when you have to make up your mind that it's time to, to make improvements in your life. They say that when you do these things, you're only doing it for yourself. But I don't think that's true, because one of the things that keeps me going and not wanting to give up the fight is I got three great granddaughters. Not great granddaughters, but they're awesome granddaughters, and they are behind me and support me in my daily efforts, to stay, I'm not even going to say stay sober, just keep living a clean life. And they're proud of the fact that I'm turning around and giving back. So I would tell any individual that you can also think about others when you're trying to make changes, because you've already impacted them. So now it's time to turn the tables and let them see that you know it's time to make some positive moves, and if they see that you're serious and sincere, they'll be right there with you. And so then also it's about taking responsibility and reaching, looking for all avenues that you would accept to get help. I did not like outpatient treatment, but others do. Others do get the outpatient treatment, and they're doing well. It's just like at one point I didn't take medications, but I never talked down on anyone or denied anyone the right to have to have a medication, because now I'm actually on a medication for mood stabilization. So, I will do my best to give them as many resources as possible. And you know, at the end of this, I would do the same for, you know, for your audience. If anybody wants to reach out to me at the end of this, I'll give them my email address, and I'll help them find resources that will suit the needs that they have. But I would always encourage people to go out and look for resources that they feel comfortable with.
Right, right. Well, anyone listening, you get your pen and paper ready, because we're going to give his email address so you can email him. But, Michael, tell us a little bit about the stigma attached to mental health and your take on that.
Well, you know, stigma is, you know, that a lot of people view that as a way that of blaming themselves for things that they're going through, things that they do, that, you know, their behaviors. But it's not, you know, but stigma is just really a good way for people to use to hide their truths. You know, some people hide behind the stigma because they don't want anybody to know that they're having problems. But, you know, in order for you to overcome these problems, you have to let people know. You have to let the right people know, those who are trained to guide you along, the therapist, the psychologist, the psychiatrist who will help you with your medications. But, you know, most of the time, you know, in my lifetime, and, you know, with our generation as an example, we were taught to sweep things under the rug. You know, if you're experiencing problems, even for instance, I experienced a lot of anger problems. You know, and no one knew that it was associated with mental illness. You know, it was just looking at it as a behavioral problem, and I needed to do something about it. I needed to stop myself. You know, it was not that easy. It's not that easy, you know. So the, you know, but there, you know, but there are things that people, you know, can do to try to help eradicate stigma. And that's to educate themselves. They need to be conscious of the type of language they use when they talk about mental illness. They need to encourage equality between the difference between the physical and mental illnesses. As an example, I was not doing that well this past January when it came to my mental wellness. I was deep in depression. I mean, because, you know, I've been dealing with this for 7 years, and these things do not go away. They're always going to be looming over you, you know. So you always have to be ready to try to open up your toolbox that you get when you go out there and get these trainings. They teach you, but they teach you tools that help you on a daily basis. But sometimes you just succumb to it, and you know when you realize where you are, you have to pull yourself up and try to do something about it. So me, because I suffer from diabetes and high blood pressure and high cholesterol, that all I think that all led to partially to the depression that I was feeling. So I started doing things. I found out about a program through the VA. I signed up for it. I've been involved with this program since March, and they've helped me manage all my physical ailments to the point where it's positively affecting my mental wellness. So as long as I keep working on those things, I feel better. But I have to work on it every day.
Mr. Brooks, may I cut in here?
Big pardon?
Mr. Brooks, may I cut in here?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Call us that are on hold. You will be recognized by the last digits of your phone number. Please stay on the line. And we have a board full of guests that like to get in and conversate on this, talk to your special guest. So we have some people who would like to get some questions or make a comment. Is it okay if I start letting them in?
Yes, let them in. And we'd like to let everybody know to try to keep your questions brief and your comments brief because we have a lot of people that want to get in. So maybe no more than 90 seconds per caller, please. But, yes, let them in, Oscar.
Okay, caller 1296. State your name and where you're calling from.
Good morning, everybody. This is Walter Williams from Alabaster, Alabama. Sorry I'm late coming in, but I was dealing with my son. I had to take his call this morning. However, good morning, Michael. I've heard some, been listening to your program here and what you said, and especially in the area of mental health. What I hear is commendable, and you're giving some good nuggets out. Mental health is, and treatment for mental health is not a one-size-fit-all. I heard that from your comments. What works for one person might not necessarily work for another person. But then, nevertheless, you had perseverance. You kept on until you found that thing that worked for you. And then you said that you don't really give advice, that you deal with people on a peer-peer level. That's awesome. And I understand what you're saying, and you explained it well. You also said that you had to go out and search, read, and get some information that was already out there. And that is so very important, read and study, because
yes,
those are two verbs. They are two verbs, and you got to do. Both of them imply you're doing. You got to do it. It ain't going to just jump
right
in, but you got to do it. And so I commend you thus far in your travels, thus far in your progression, and keep on doing what you're doing. And first and foremost, I know, because I hear it in your speech, that you made a decision to let God guide you, and you made a decision to accept his salvation through Jesus Christ. Thank you.
That's right. That's right. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Do we have another caller, Oscar? Yeah, so, Michael, I know that you're in the National Alliance for Mental Health.
I mean,
tell us a little bit about your work in NAMI.
Well, first of all, NAMI, again, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, is the largest national nonprofit organization, the largest advocate for mental health in the country. We have about 11 services and different services and programs that that we offer. We offer support with support groups like the group that I facilitate, the connection support group, which is for peers who come in. They have a safe place to talk about what's going on with them now. We also have a support group for family members, the family support group. So these are the people who take care of individuals living with mental illness. And they, anybody that takes care of anyone, whether it has to do with mental illness or whether they're taking care of their mother with cancer or Alzheimer's, they actually take on a part of the life of the person that they're giving care to. The family support group helps them to learn to step back and apply self care so that they can continue on helping those that they love. We also have volunteer opportunities. You know, we need volunteers. To help us get the word out. Before the pandemic, we were out in the community all the time. I went out. You know, we have a season like from March until October, and I was out every week up until all through that point, setting up tables and just talking to people. You know, letting them know that NAMI is there to help them. My role as the FaithNet coordinator is simply is not to take my spirituality in to the churches. I mean, my goal is to take the subject of mental health and present it to the churches, and hopefully they will incorporate what we've taught them or what we're trying to teach them, because we're also wanting to start a relationship between our organization and theirs, that they can start adding mental health into their ministry. I've come across several churches in the past year that they're already doing that, and they're doing great jobs, and we're partnering with more and more churches every day. I just had a Zoom presentation on Thursday night with one of our local churches, and we had about 20 people in participation, and we had what we call our own voice presentation, where two people tell their stories along with video. We offer videos and a PowerPoint slideshow, and it went really well. Normally we do this for an hour, but we did it for an hour and a half, and you know, so we're doing more and more of this. But my goal now is to try to do one of these presentations every week. And there's so many churches out. Doesn't matter whether they're Baptist, Presbyterian, or Catholic. We want to get out there and help them start talking about mental health in the church, because it's no longer a time where we can say that we can pray this away. You know, God gave us all talents, and that includes the mental health professionals and the doctors. So that means He wants us to use them. So that's right. The message that we're trying to get across.
Michael, for listeners who are listening outside of Sacramento, California, do you guys have offices across the country, or is
it? Yes, NAMI? We do. NAMI is in every state and just about every major city. Usually the affiliates, they cover the whole county. Like we cover Sacramento County, but we also cover Placerville, and a couple of other cities in the Yolo area as well. So you know, we can find a NAMI office just as close to anyone as possible at any time. If anybody was to call our office, I'm afraid I don't have the number on me right this second, but if anybody were to go to our website, and I'll make sure to give you our website where you get all that information, you can find out. You can go to our website and see what we do in Sacramento, and then I'll give you the website for the national office, and that's where you can go and put in your zip code and find an office near you.
Okay, why don't you do that right now, Michael?
Mr. Brooks, we have a board full, but if anybody would like to join the conversation, please press.
Okay. Yeah.
Would you like me to give it now?
Yeah, you can give it now.
Okay. Well, for NAMI Sacramento, it's simply www.NAMI, that's, and for you military folks, that's November Alpha Mike India Sacramento, that's all one word, .org. And for the national, is simply NAMI.org.
Okay, and they can put in their zip code and find the nearest office where they can get some information about mental health,
what we can offer them as well. Now, too, if you know for some reason you can't remember this, you can always just go to Google and put in NAMI, and let's say if you're in Philadelphia, put NAMI Philadelphia, or you should get a listing that way as well.
Okay, and so they help and give advice and tips for folks who might be experiencing mental health issues, or know somebody that might be experiencing mental health issues. It sounds
right. We also give classes. We give classes to peers, what we call peer to peer. That's an 8-week class. We have family support classes, and this teaches individuals how about mental illness. Teaches the peers about how to help themselves, and the family members learn how to help their family members.
Right. Well, yep. Michael, I'd like to turn the page to your next job that you do, working with the Mental Health California and the Brother Be Well Project. Could you enlighten us a little bit on that?
Well, yeah, you know, Brother Be Well is a program that was born with the Mental Health California organization. Mental Health California, they're big with all facets of mental health. They provide classes for, as an example, mental health first aid. They've gone around the state actually with giving presentations. Of all types. They're really into helping the youth, especially youth of color, as well as the LGBTQIA community. Right now we're with the Brother Be Well Project. There's a plan to get the program launched in January. And right now we're working diligently we're working on putting together videos. We're doing group discussions. We're putting together podcasts. We're doing things with virtual reality. And we're bringing in the youth to work with. We're not just preparing things to present to youth. We're bringing them in. They're doing a lot of the work as well. We're doing studies and surveys, and they're giving us a lot of food for thought in order for us to be able to turn around and give them good services. And this is something that's going to go on. For at least the next 3 years, as we're contracted to Sacramento County Department of Behavioral Health Services.
Mm-hmm. And this is especially targeting men and boys from the age of 13 to 30.
Yes, yes.
Okay, and a lot of people, I would imagine, and I know that it's in this group, particularly. Minorities have to deal with the normal challenges of being that young, but also the racial history, you know, in the United States falls down on them as well. So I know another project you work with support groups for people living with mental health. I believe you covered that a little bit. As far as those support groups, Michael, could you just elaborate on that for us a little bit more?
Well, you know, of course, before COVID, we did in-person support groups, and we had five locations around Sacramento that we went to. So we have support groups in Elk Grove and Del Paso Heights. We have some at Sutter Health, but you know, since the COVID, we've gone online. So we're on Zoom now, and we have three nights that we offer support groups: Monday afternoons at 2 o'clock, and Thursdays and Sundays at 7 o'clock, and these each 90 minute broadcast. So just like with the in-person, we make sure that we have, a high degree of confidentiality. It's a safe place. We make sure that is safe. We're prepared that if we have any problems with anyone, we're prepared to, go into take them to another room so we can find out if there's anything else that we could do aside from, just sharing of information. But we have yet to have any problems with anybody. You know, people come in, they know they're in a safe place, and they're comfortable speaking of, about the things that are bothering them. And what we do is we open it up to everybody, so everybody can offer their life experiences as it relates to somebody who's having difficulty any given night.
Right. Well, let me just say again that to everybody you're listening to, the Council of Elders program on Saturday mornings, and if anyone has a question for Michael or a comment, please press 1. So Michael, we've got about, it's about 10:40 Pacific time right now. We've got about another 20 minutes. And I just want to make sure that you, is there anything on your heart that you want to talk about that, you know, maybe we hadn't, I hadn't asked you about. So, you know, be feel free to just tell us what's on your mind.
Well, you know, what really on my mind is what I'm going through right now, which I'm going through some real good times. I'm, you know, I'm finally getting to a place where I feel like, you know, I have, you know, true purpose in life, you know, just like I felt when I was in the military. But when I got out of the military, I tell you, I was lost, man. You know, I mean, I knew to get a job, but, you know, for a while it was from job to job to job until I got with the county. And, you know, I never really truly found what I thought was, you know, was my purpose, but I was still in a position where I could help the community. So I, you know, some I've always been proud of that, and I always will be. I know I did some good there, but now, since coming on this journey in 2013, I actually got involved with NAMI in 2016, and that's when I really felt like I was home. The people that I work with, are, you know, they're great people. And we're mostly not just compatriots, we're friends. I finally have, you know, a group of people that understands me, and I can call them at any time, anytime I need them. I'm finding that out also with some people that I'm getting real close to that I've met of late. And, you know, it's more incentive for me to want to go out and help other people. And right now what I'm doing is I'm working on a lot of mindfulness exercises. I'm on a 28-day challenge to do mindfulness exercises every day. And what I decided to do is I decided to add a 30-minute walk every day. So every day that I do mindfulness, I got to make sure I do a 30-minute walk. And today I did 59 minutes and almost 2.5 miles. So,
Michael, you bring up something, mindfulness exercising. Now you got to tell us a little bit about that.
Well, mindfulness, for me and for many people, it really has to do with the practice of breathing. And what I also call centering, and you know, there's several names for this, but basically centering is like it's an exercise where you almost imagine the top of your head and other points in your body, from your head to your neck, your shoulders, your arms, all the way down to your feet and back up, and you want to actually feel these places. And you got to remember, you're not touching them with your hands. You know, your hands are at your side, or resting on your chest. That's part of it, but a large part of it is breathing. The breathing helps relieve stress. But it's practice breathing. I mean, you know, it's not just sitting down and just, you know, taking breath. You know, but they're regimented. And what I do is I use guided meditation as a part of it.
I see. You know, you say 30 minutes. How long do you do it?
I only do it for like, maybe 7 to 10 minutes each morning.
So okay.
And but it's also something that you can use throughout the day though too. If you find yourself in a stressful situation, you're out driving, and if you're starting to feel road rage. I mean, when you get to the next light, you can sit up there. You know, some lights can go up to 5 minutes. You can use that time for practice breathing exercises, and like I say, relieve mm-hmm. stress, bring yourself back to back to yourself.
Mm-hmm. Give yourself a little time out, huh?
Yes, and it doesn't help to add that prayer to it too.
Amen. Yeah.
So, are there any other techniques that you can let us in on?
Well, I mean, we can go for hours on end on this, but I'll tell you, I wasn't quite prepared for this, but maybe if you'll have me back, I can do a show on mindfulness.
Okay. Well, when you mentioned that, I hadn't really heard of that terminology, so it was just my curiosity. But hey, we will be having you back, Michael. So, and also with the Council of Elders, at some point we're going to be getting out into in the community, and you being on the Council of Elders, you can go out and facilitate some of these seminars that we'll be having.
Well, I look forward to it.
We have a person who'd like to make a comment or ask your guest a question. Can I let them
know? All right, go right ahead.
Caller 304-240. State your name and where you're calling from. Caller 304-240. State your name and where you're calling from. Well, I guess he's shy.
Hello.
I'm here. Hello.
Lou. Hello.
Yes. My name is Dr. Sunday Oyewole. I just want to commend you, Michael, for the open spirit, for what you share with us. You took a lot of punch out of the social stigma that's associated with mental health illness. And so I want to commend you for being so open and so forthcoming in sharing your life experience with us. One thing that I want to mention is many years ago, I had experience with a lot of patients with mental health issues, but at the same time, we were dealing with alcoholism. And you talked a little bit about that, to the extent that people end up needing liver transplant. And you alluded to that a little bit. So I just, one thing I do share with people on who need transplant or people who have mental illness is not to use alcohol to kind of cover the mental health issues, because the downside of alcoholism is having to be on the list for transplant. And as you alluded to, you were told not to get involved with alcohol because of the consequences. And for our community, yes, especially African-American communities, a lot of our people are on transplant programs, and they're not getting the liver transplant they need. So I just want to make sure that you shared that story with people, that when you talk to them, not to use alcohol as another way to cover up or to deal with mental health issues. So that's just something I want to just pass on and see if you want to share with whoever you talk to in the future.
Well, Doctor, I want to thank you for that comment. When it comes to the experience that I have with those who have had liver problems, I mean, I've actually lost associates, you know, people who lost their lives, like for instance, we had one individual who had gone to UCSF from Sacramento and came back and told us that there was nothing that they could do for him, and you know, within a month he was gone. I mean, so you know, and when it comes to also using alcohol to cover up mental health, I'm gonna tell you, for me, I didn't know that's what I was doing. I didn't know the term, self-medicate. I didn't know that term until I started my mental health recovery. But when that was taught to me, I really saw that that's what I was doing, and that's why I had sort of an aha moment in the beginnings of my journey, because I knew now why I was doing what I was doing. But at the time, I wasn't aware. I just thought I was just hiding feelings, but not just hiding symptoms. But I thank you for that comment, because it's very important for individuals to understand that that is why we self-medicate, whether we know it or not. So, you know, so If that's what you're doing, you know, I suggest that a person who is doing that really take a good look at themselves and go out there and seek help, because it's never too late.
Hey, Michael, if I want to share, if times allow, if Brother Brooks, if I can share one more experience about dealing with people with transplant, can I make another comment?
Yes, can, as far as I'm concerned, yes, sir.
Okay. In 2016, I actually went to UCSF, attended a transplant program in 2016, and the story I brought to my pastor at that time was, Pastor, what can we do to help anybody in our community dealing with transplant? Because the statistic of people that are not getting transplants when they need it, they're not getting on the list. I said that statistic was staggering. So I shared this with my pastor. What can we do to help our people? So it is very important. I'm just glad you mentioned UCSF. In 2016, when I attended that program, it just really hit me so hard that a lot of our folks are not getting the transplant they need. They're not on the list. Or what do we need to do as a community? So I shared that with my pastor as to what can we do as a church to help our people who need transplant or who may need transplant in the future.
Right, right.
Well, I thank you for that, Doctor.
That does live in California, UCSF is the University of California, San Francisco. Well, thank you, Doctor. Michael, we got a few more minutes. I got a question, though, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but let's just say that someone listening to this show today, they have a family member or a friend who they want to reach out and tell them, listen, you need to get some help. You're on the wrong track. And how could we politely, you know, tell them so that it might be effective?
Well, you know, that's why we can go to resources such as, you know, NAMI Sacramento. We also have resources such as Cal Voices, which used to be NorCal MHA. Mental Health America. There are all kind of classes for people that, for instance, if you're talking about a mother who's trying to save their son, and maybe they can't get their son to agree to any type of treatment, but what they can do is they can go educate themselves on how to deal with you know with that loved one, and what they'll learn tools of that they can use to learn how to talk to them. It's one thing to say, well, I think you need some trouble. I think you need some help because you're doing this and you're doing that. But there are ways to talk to your loved ones, you know, and hopefully, you know, convince them that they can get some help. You know, because you want to try to do it. You want to try to do things, you know, when you can, before they become a problem. So it's like, you know, preventive medicine. So it's about educating yourself to be able to better understand your loved one and possibly educate them to want to do better.
Right. Now, does NAMI, is that with NAMI or?
We have classes that will help them.
Oh, okay. Okay. So,
Yeah,
so the thing is, you want to tell people in a way that won't turn them off and make them just rebel. You want to tell them in a way that, you know, you can get through to them. So
yes.
So, yeah, we got a few more
Mr.
minutes.
Brooks. Okay. Mr. Brooks, I'm opening all the microphones.
Yes.
Everybody, you are welcome to comment with our special guest, Michael Gian. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Yes, this is Ron Rogers, calling from Sacramento. Very interesting conversation, Mike, and Jensen stole my question. I've been chomping at the bit to ask that because, as you say, you need a support team going through anything.
Mm-hmm.
and the whole idea for me was, well, how do you talk to that person that don't want you to talk to them about? And you open that door. Elaborate on that, please.
Well, I have, you know, again, like I said, I don't give advice. What I do, the way I help people is to tell my story. If you know, let me put it this way, an example. When I first successfully stopped drinking and using drugs, one of my nephews came up to me on more than one occasion, and you know, while I'm around the doing family functions and everybody's drinking and doing their things and partying, you know, he started coming up to me and asking me questions like, doesn't this bother you to be around, you know, people drinking? And I would tell them, I would tell them no. But I would start to tell them why, giving them ideas why, because he's telling me, in a way, without saying anything, he's telling me that he's at least thinking about, you know, making some improvements. If I see someone else, you know, I can't go and say I think you're suffering from bipolar disorder. But you know what I can do is I can try. If I think that and I do suffer from bipolar disorder, then I can tell a little story about some things that I've experienced. Hopefully, that it will resonate with an individual that they may either want to get some help or just ask some more questions. You know, it's a very difficult, delicate situation to be able to try to walk up to somebody and say, I think you need help, because I can tell you, if I put myself in that place, I wouldn't appreciate it.
Right. But you say that there are seminars and courses that you can go to help you learn how to talk to people.
Oh yes. Not only do we have classes, and I mean, like I said, we have other classes that the Cal Voices have, but they provide a class called RAP, which is Wellness Recovery Action Plan. So if anybody that's interested in learning how to live day to day, they can learn to develop an action plan, you know, for themselves that they can follow every day. Also, to find out other things, we got Zoom now. There are so many Zoom meetings and classes. You know, there's stuff on YouTube. You know, you just go to the internet, man. And, you know, anything that you can think of, all you got to do is put it in there, and you'll get thousands of links. You can educate yourself. Just going on the internet. But anytime you want to know about any of our classes, just contact NAMI at the website that I gave you.
Oh, okay. Well, Mike, we're about to close out the show in a couple of minutes, but we certainly appreciate you for coming on today. We got to have you back again for part two of this because we didn't get to everything. But certainly thank you for giving us some highlights on what you're doing. And let me just say before we go that our Council of Elders group I'm seeing across the country there are various Council of Elders groups, and they have different focuses. But ours is trying to educate people to change generations, to break the cycle of poverty and break the cycle of crime and drug abuse. So we'll be on next Saturday for folks that want to call in. And Walter Weaves, would you close us out in a prayer today?
Yes, sir. Most gracious and heavenly Father, we thank you for Michael this morning. We thank you for working in his life, and we thank you for him being an example for others, that what you have done for him, he is eager to spread on for others. We thank you for all who are listening. We ask that you would keep them in your loving care until we meet again. It's in Jesus' name that we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Amen. All right, everybody. We'll see you next Saturday. If you want to get a
And I know he's mine.
Good show, everybody.
All right.
Did quite well, gentlemen. Quite well.
Yes, sir. To God be the glory.
Amen. You walked us right on to it. Mikey, you still there?
Where's that music coming from?
I don't know. I think Oscar's trying to wake us up over there. Real good, Jim.
Oh, yeah, it's a good show. Micah's good. Micah, he must have hung up.
He hung up? Okay. Well, good show, and doggone it, if you didn't steal my question just before.
I have had some family members that was going through what Michael went through, but, you know, it's kind of a touchy subject, you know.
It is. It truly is. And see, I have a friend that he just lost his grandson behind that. And they've been knowing for years that he was mentally unstable, and they dealt with it, and the police there in the little old town. Well, you know where Walnut Creek is.
Oh, yeah.
And they killed him right out in front of his house. Now,
They don't cut the black man no slack, do they?
No, they don't. Now, he was attacking them with what I later understood he was considering a spear. He was doing some stuff that God wanted him to do. And he came at the policeman his spear was one of those pry bars. You know what a pry bar is?
Yeah. Crowbar.
And well, it's a crowbar, yeah, but this one's straight. It's just straight. And it's about 4 foot long. He ran out.
It was an iron metal.
Yeah. They shot and killed him. And the thing was, and see, again, now this is where that reparation stuff comes in with this new turning of how we handle our police department. They knew that he was mentally ill.
Anybody who can go home can talk now.
Huh?
Anybody who can go home can talk.
Oh, okay. But, yeah, man. And again, that got to my soul because I knew the boy. I'd seen him grow up. And everybody was making allowances for him. But it's just sometimes he just go off.
Right. Well, I had one of my neighbors across the street from me about a year ago, probably a year and a half ago, he walked into a train down here in Galt.
Mm.
And I knew him from a toddler, you know.
Yeah,
but I didn't know the depth of his thing. So
and see, that's the reason I think that question that you asked was so important, because see, he gave me something that I didn't know. A concerned parent can go somewhere and get some understanding about what's going on,
right?
And
how to talk to him.
I didn't know that. Yeah, how to talk to him. Hey, man, look, you. Yeah, you're not doing stuff right. We need to find a different way for you to think. Well, that's not an easy way to say something, you know. But that's me.
right.
We need to find you a new way of thinking. See, I'm kind of direct.
This is my first time. They can't hear me, Kim. Kenny. This is my first time at the Oh, okay.
Who's
this
speaking?
Is my first time. I thought I'd be better at listening. Hello, this good morning. Good morning, gentlemen. This is Bill Dickinson.
Oh, Bill Dickinson.
Mr. Bill. This is the Bill Dickinson. Oh, okay.
And I thought that I would just listen this morning, since this is, and I only listened to a portion of it, your last 12, 15 minutes of it, but I just wanted to kind of get the gist of what was going on and how you guys were doing with it. That's all. I just wanted to listen this morning.
Right. Well, Bill, you had given me a call, I don't know, a while back, and left me a message. This is Jansen. Left me a message, and for some reason, I didn't get the message until, I don't know, maybe checked about a week later or something like that. And you was trying to get the number. You were trying to get the number to call, and I tell you the truth, man, I forgot to call you back. I'm sorry about that. But I see you did get the number probably from Oscar.
Yes. In fact, I'm sitting here in Oscar's garage with him.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Yeah, so if you go to Blog Talk Radio, guys, and Oscar told me this, if you go to blogtalkradio.com, and then when you get there, they got a browser, you type in Council of Elders, it'll pull up the recent shows, and you can listen to them at your leisure, whether it be on your cell phone or whatever, you know.
Right.
And Oscar, remind us of how soon that's going to go on. Say today's show.
Hello, Jan.
Hello.
Okay.
This Pat.
This is Oscar. Oh, good.
Oh, this is Mr. Pat. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm glad y'all stay on the air after the show so we can hear you talk.
You be eavesdropping, Pat. That's what you're doing.
Yeah, well, okay. I'm going to call you later.
Hey, guys, this is my sister. This is my sister, Marjorie Curtis, calling from Greenwood, Mississippi. We call her Pat, though. Good to hear from you today, Pat.
Yeah, well, all right.
Yes,
we'll talk
Hello.
Later.
Okay.
Okay, you can come up and get the show in about an hour. It will drop on the server in about an hour. So go up to blogtalkradio.com, and in the search bar, type in Council of Elders, and the latest show should be done.
Okay.
Very good. Like some earlier shows, too.
Yeah.
Now, are you going to be able to back up that, you know, with the, say, like, you know, you've already started with your first radio interview with the lady. I can't remember her name. You know what I'm saying. But will you be able to put that in the front? Yes. Will you be able to put that in the front of everything?
I don't know if I can do that, man. You want to hear that interview again? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I was just thinking about having everything categorized.
Oh, yeah, well. That's a little bit beyond my pay grade categorizing it, but we'll work on it.
That's a good answer. I just posed the question, my brother.
I'm lucky to be here.
That's good.
I know one is more than you know.
Yeah. You just one step ahead of me, huh? And what you say, quit tapping me on my back every time.
No, but you make a good point, though. Maybe we can categorize it. Or I'm going to put these on a website, and because I have some of the older shows. I think she was on the show, the Uplifting Communities show.
Right.
That, if you go to Blog Talk Radio, and you type in Uplifting Communities, then John has a variety of shows on there. But he did, in his little title, he did put down there, well, this is Uplifting Communities presenting Council of Elders, you know. So, but we'll work on trying to categorize and label everything. If you want to go back and listen to some shows?
I shut up now. I created somebody else another job, so I shut up now.
Hey, man, that'll be. Hey, Ron, that'd be a good job.
See, there you go. You throwing it back at me now. I haven't got an opportunity to even start on that last one you gave me, Jensen, so no.
Oh, man.
And matter of fact, I'm going to start that next week.
Go at your own pace, man. Go at your own pace. Is anybody else listening besides us?
Oh, yeah. You got 1, 2, 3. You got 3 more people listening here. You have 8473, that's Ron, I think it is. And
yeah.
you have 4974, and you have Bill Dickinson.
Yeah, 4974, that's me.
That's you, sure?
Yeah,
so. Okay. So that's
it's
you.
It's
going
to be changing now because I got to go to work.
Bill, and you have 94.
Yeah, I got to go, guys. I got to move along.
9471.
Yeah, I got a big old tree limb I got to get out of my yard again.
9471 is listening. And I don't know who 9471 is. I'm sorry.
I got to run too, man. So y'all have a great day. I'll talk to y'all a little bit later.
All right, Ron. Take care.
All right.
I got to run myself, and we'll do this again next week, same time, same station. Bye, bye, everybody.
All right. Let's do that. It's a wrap. Good day.
An hour, right?